At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we tackle violence against women and girls through education, empowerment, and hope. Join Kate, a survivor and advocate, as she shares insights, strategies, and stories that inspire healing and action. Together, we'll break the cycle and pave the way for a future of safety and strength. This show contains a trigger warning. And now, here's your host, Kate Beasley.
So welcome back to another episode, and today I am rejoined by my friend Jenny Claridge. Welcome, Jen.
Hello again.
Would you like to just reintroduce yourself for those who haven't listened to your previous episodes?
Yeah, so I'm Jenny. I'm an anti-pathology trauma-informed advocate, frontline IFBA, and I'm a survivor myself and friend of Kate.
Yes, me and Jen, we've been through the whole journey together. We started off just healing, didn't we? That's how our journey started.
Yeah.
So today we are going to talk a little bit about a little bit of a topic that many victims feel a lot of shame and guilt around. But actually, it's more common than what people realise, and that is suicide ideation. Now, obviously, we know that perpetrators can engage in suicide ideation as well, or appear to be engaging in it, which is a manipulation tactic. But it is really common with victims, and it is really important to understand the difference between when the perpetrator does it and when the victim does it. Victims very, very rarely speak out about it, but when they do speak, when they do verbalise it in the moment, it is out of sheer desperation. And I know that's, you've experienced that, Jen, haven't you?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really, really important topic, isn't it? And we know that at the moment there's a lot of awareness around this and the correlation between domestic abuse, coercive control, and suicide in people who have been victimized by domestic abusers. So it's really, really important to speak about. And like you said, often a perpetrator will threaten suicide as a manipulation tactic to, you know, keep the victim in. You know, the victim's so frightened at what the perpetrator is going to do to themselves. And because, you know, we've got a lot of empathy, it's very, very difficult to manage.
Yeah.
However, a lot of people victimized by domestic abuse feel suicidal themselves. And we know we've seen it in the news, a lot of women are taking their own lives because of domestic abuse and what the perpetrators are doing to them. And I feel like a lot of women are so frightened to speak up about it. And I know I was. I was scared, I was worried that I was being manipulative when I felt that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, it made me scared to say anything. And when I did say something, I would question myself constantly, you know, am I being manipulative? Is this, you know, and I thought it was me. And I just, I think it's, like you said, so important to know the difference, to be able to see the difference in that, because otherwise we're going to lose so many more women.
Yeah.
To this.
Yeah.
People are frightened to speak up because they question whether they are in fact the manipulator,
yeah.
because that's the way they're feeling.
Because there is always a difference. And I know with the perpetrator, and I can speak firsthand, I've got lots of experience with this, unfortunately, with my ex. I mean, it's something that he did every single time that he was his back was against the wall, that he thought that he was close to being made accountable for something. That was the pattern, and that's what professionals need to be looking for when they are evaluating these things, is there a pattern to when this is showing up, and what is that pattern? Because generally with the victim, there'll be a clear pattern of abusive and terrorizing behavior to work
it's
from.
A cycle.
Yeah.
It's a cycle with the perpetrator, it's a cycle with the victim.
Yeah. And this is where it's really important for, you know, something I talk about a lot is the timelines. The timeline's absolutely vital. Without that timeline, you can't differentiate between a perpetrator that's saying they want to end their life and a victim that's saying they want to end their life. You need to see that pattern to the behavior to identify, well, is this person doing it every time they're at risk of either their victim leaving them, their victim getting tired of their behaviour, or they're at risk of being held accountable in some other way, whether it be with work, because I know that was something with my ex. It was if there's an issue with work, and that was when he got himself sectioned, actually, because it served him. It served a purpose. He knew they couldn't fire him when he was sectioned on a mental health ward. He wanted to be sectioned. So you've got to look at those patterns. But, you know, with a victim, it is generally a lot of the time they either won't say anything at all, but if they do, there will be a clear pattern of abuse and control, and it'll be out of sheer desperation. It'll either be saying it in the hope that the abuse stops, that the person that's subjecting them to it has a small amount of empathy and remorse and think, oh, okay, I've pushed it too far, I'll stop. Or it is just out of, you know, it goes back to the reactive response. As well, it can be said in the heat of the moment, and it's like, I can't take this anymore. I want a way out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then instantly, as soon as they've said it, they will feel guilty. And again, that's something that I can relate to, because even a thought of, I don't want to be here, the minute that thought comes into your mind, you feel instantly guilty about having that thought, because, well, what sort of mother does that make me if I'm thinking that? If that thought's even coming to my mind, how can I leave my child? And that element of guilt and shame will come in.
Well, I mean, I've got quite a significant history of this, you know, suicidal sort of behaviour and sort of thoughts and ideation. I would say for nearly a decade while I was with the perpetrator, I think I woke up nearly every single one I did. I woke up every single day for at least a decade. I did not have a day where I did not think about suicide or taking my own life. Some days it wouldn't be as strong as others. Other days it was all that I could think about. I believe because of him, I believe, truly believed that my children would be better off without me. I thought that what we were all going through, what my children were going through, it was absolute hell. And I believed it was my fault. It was me causing the problems. And if I was out of the equation, they would, of course, be upset, but they would get over it and then their lives would be so much better. And that's what he made me believe. And so for all those years, I did, not a day went by where I didn't think about that. And I was consumed with guilt and shame about it, which made it even worse. And then when something would happen, when I would do something to myself, social services would be involved, police would be involved. And the way I was written about, so they would write about the domestic abuse, they knew there was domestic abuse. But the way they would write about the situations was, as far as the children are concerned, they would write about us as if we had equal responsibility for harming the children. And although it, what I was doing was harming the children, actually, if it weren't for the domestic abuse, so it made me even worse and made me feel even worse. And I just, so it was a really, really vicious circle going on there, very, very harmful.
Yeah. I know you did. You did actually get close to being successful, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I'm very lucky to be here. I didn't always think that. And when I, when I woke up, because it was more than once, and when I woke up, I was great. One time I was sort of like, oh my God, I'm so glad that didn't work. And then, but then it got to a point where I would wake up and I just was so angry that it didn't work, like so angry for such a long time. It was really, really hard, really, really tough. It's been a while since I felt like that, since I left.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very lucky to be here.
When did the those thoughts stop, Jen?
Okay, so the last crisis I had of that level was back in 2019. Some really traumatic events happened, and that was the last time. I was still living with the perpetrator, but even after that, I lived with the perpetrator for a little bit longer, I would say sort of like 6 months or so after that. But after that event, I kind of decided things had to change. And then when I decided I was going to get a divorce, after actually something quite small happened, in the big scheme of things, I decided to get divorced. And you know what? Ever since then, it changed. It changed. And then certainly since I escaped in 2021, and my mental health has never been like it was back then. It's completely, completely changed. Like I'm a different person. Like when I read the reports now, it is literally like a completely different person. He, like, people would argue, he would argue that I had struggles with mental health before that, which I did. I had a traumatic childhood, I had traumatic childhood events. And so my mental health was vulnerable. He knew that. And that was how it was able to, it was able to take hold so strongly with him.
Well, yeah, because it was the perpetrator isn't the core, isn't the ultimate cause. They are the catalyst to an old wound a lot of the time, and that obviously in your case was very, very much prevalent. He was a catalyst to a very big, well, he triggered a very, very big wound. So that inescapability was very prevalent. So if you notice that when that turning point changed and those thoughts started to dissipate, was when you made the decision that you were going to file for divorce, the relationship you were getting out, you'd suddenly given that part of the brain an exit route, an alternative exit route.
Yeah.
Because that's what the suicidal thought is. It's the emotional part of the brain thinking, well, I don't see any way out of this.
And the pain, it was just so painful. It's like unbearable.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's, you know, it's the only way. And it was easy as well. And do you know what? It was really, really strange as well, because I didn't have a good relationship with my family, and he knew that. And he also, you know, continued to drive a wedge in between us as the time went on. And, you know, I would like be in hospital after I tried to take my life. And, you know, he was the only person who visited me in hospital. The only person who visited me, like not one of my family came. He was the only one. I remember being in hospital for 3 days. He was the only person that came, but I didn't, like, I was led there for 3 days. I didn't even have a change of clothes. Like, not a change of clothes, not a toothbrush, nothing. And I lay in that bed for 3 days. So I was in that state. He was sat next to me. It was as if he was the only person who was there for me, even though he still wasn't looking after me properly. But, you know, it's so confusing, you know?
It's that proverbial, they are your source of pain and your saviour all in one big messy package. And that's what makes it harder, because, I mean, it was similar with me when I first got with my ex. I had a lot of issues with my family. Again, I was in hospital, not for the same reasons as you, because I'd had a really bad Crohn's flare. And my dad did not even come and visit me.
Mm.
Not once. So he was like my knight in shining armour. He was the only person that actually cared about me, even though it came with complaints and moaning that I was putting him out, he was still there. So it is they position themselves as your source of pain, but also your saviour, because the worst pain in the world is to feel abandoned and feel rejected and isolated from anybody who cares about you at all.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and they do like to sort of, you know, my brother Chetan in particular, he would tell everyone. He would tell everyone like what was going on. I felt so embarrassed. Like, I can't even, like, all the neighbors knew. He would text all my family, he would text all my friends. So you can imagine like how lonely that is, you know, and how desperate, you know, it can make you feel. But again, you know, it kind of reiterated the feelings of, am I a manipulator because I've done this?
Yeah, it does.
You know? And yeah, it was a very, very hard time. And I just think it's so important that people out there understand that, you know, you're not this is how you're feeling and you're being abused.
Mm.
Like, it's not you. Like, it's, they're very normal feelings to feel when you're in a situation like that, because it does feel hopeless. Feels like there's no way out. It does feel like people would be better off without you, because that's what they make you believe.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And it's so, gets so entrenched. And I just don't want to keep seeing women being lost to suicide because of perpetrators, and then perpetrators getting away with it. Because it has such a massive correlation. That's why, you know, it's one of the questions in the Dutch. You know, are you feeling depressed or suicidal? And
The problem is, a lot of people don't like that. Is one of the questions within the dash that a lot of victims feel they clam up. They don't want to answer it. Similarly to the sexual, any sexual coercion, anything that's made you sexually intimidated. They don't want to answer it because they're afraid of feeling being judged. It's just something they don't want. And I mean, even when I have people that will answer that question in a timeline, they will answer it with me because they feel safe with me, but they always caveat it with, "But I don't feel comfortable talking about it to the police."
And do you know what? I think some of that is to do with because there's a lot of kickoff about sexual crimes. And I think when you speak about a perpetrator perpetrating a sexual crime against you, and then people find that out, people turn against you. They also, a victim might be worried about getting the perpetrator, who they most likely still love very much, in trouble for sexual crimes as well. So I think there's such a massive element of fear around reporting the sexual crimes, and with the suicidal ideation as well. It's known that if there is sexual abuse going on as well, it's more likely that you're gonna feel like that because of the guilt and the sheer amount of guilt and shame and the fear
Yeah,
of.
and particularly if they've been coerced into doing things that actually they ordinarily don't feel wouldn't feel comfortable, and they are ashamed of that they've done those sorts of things, sexual related activities, and they don't want people to know that they see them that way. They just don't.
No, it can feel very, very embarrassing.
And I think that's their fear is, well, if I talk about it to the police, they're going to want details, and I don't feel comfortable giving them those details because they may have actually gone along with it, but gone along with it under duress, gone along with it because they're fearful of what reaction they're going to get if they don't go along with it. And if they're asked, well, did you do it? Well, yeah, I did, but. And that's where the element of shame comes in. It's like, but I did go along with it. But how do I explain that actually I didn't feel comfortable doing it?
And you can be left feeling like you've dumped your perpetrator into a load of trouble when you shouldn't have, and that's what it feels like.
So we're just going to break for a short interval, and we'll see you after the break.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, welcome back. So, during I mean, obviously, we talked a lot about Jen's experience prior to separation. And obviously for Jen, it was very much a case of the minute she made that decision to divorce and leave, that was enough for the brain to say, okay, now I can see a way out. Now I can see a better future ahead. There's a possibility of a better future ahead. And that was enough to stop those thoughts. But unfortunately, what is inescapable for one person is not the same for everybody. And this is why there's no one size fits all here. There's no cookie cutter approach and thought process. Many, many victims will attempt to take their own life or have suicidal thoughts post-separation. I mean, I know for Jen, you know, he did try to use that against you in family court, and that could have been a factor for you, couldn't it? And it is for many people.
Absolutely. I think I was very lucky. You know, I had been in court a few times while I was still in there, and you know, it really, really affected because the outcomes were not good. I was trying to get protection and the courts, they weren't listening, and you know, that contributed a lot to those feelings because it made me feel that I was wrong, that you know, what I was experiencing wasn't real, and things like that. So it, you know, it was horrific. But by the time I'd got to family court after I had left for sort of, you know, divorce and you know, child arrangements and things like that, I was in a much better place. So I was able to speak up and advocate for myself. Yeah. Quite well. And he did try and use it against me. I was very, very lucky in the fact that I had a judge that spotted that was what he was doing, and she even said it. Mm. You know, so I was very, very lucky, but not everybody is fortunate enough to have a judge that can see that. And you know, mental health can affect children, you know that. And I think CAFCAS and the courts, they do worry about the effects that it can have on the children as well. And so it can be a very, very effective method for the perpetrator, especially when there is a history. You know, I had a history. My mental health records are probably a foot high because of how bad it was while I was there. You know, I was in crisis a lot. And it wasn't necessarily linked to the domestic abuse either. Like, they knew there was domestic abuse. It was written about, but it wasn't focused on as, you know, as what was exacerbating everything. So, you know, it can be tough.
And there's so many factors that can influence somebody to think that there's no way out, and particularly obviously if it continues after separating, because I think that's the hardest thing for a lot of victims is they make the decision to leave, they gain the courage to leave and the strength to leave, and it's still continuing. But actually, no, I'm getting it from other angles now. And that can compound that feeling of inescapability, of I don't see any way out of this. And this is something that I really want all the supporting services, all of the supportive services, to bear this in mind, because if a mother feels that they are being judged, and it is mainly women that will experience this, we know obviously there's the exceptions, we know this, there's a risk of them having a thought and thinking, well, do you know what, maybe I am the problem. And that could be that one non-trauma-informed approach and comment made by a supporting services or professional could be that one thing that tips them over the edge and makes them make a decision that they can't come back from.
And the thing is, when somebody is in, you know, sort of mental health crisis after they've left an abuser, they do tend to get very scrutinized, and it's the mental health that is looked at, and the perpetrator becomes invisible.
Yeah,
and so all the pressure is put on, you know, for ease, I'm gonna, you know, speak about this, you know, the mother. Because, you know, that's how it often looks. So, you know, you've got the mother who's tried to separate, she's tried to do the right thing to keep herself and her children safe. She's struggling with her mental health because of how difficult it is, because of what she's been subjected to. She's been made to believe by the perpetrator. She's trying to get by financially. She's trying to find, you know, have somewhere to live. She's facing family court. You know, the perpetrator becomes invisible and the mother gets scrutinized. Like, you can, you know, I've heard social workers denigrating a mother in front of her own child for not having a tidy house.
That's some actually something I've spoken to Wes Cunncliffe about, actually. We've had a good conversation about that, where, because obviously he's a youth support worker, and that's conversations he's had with social services, where they're, you know, they're judging a single mum who has experienced domestic abuse about the condition, you know, their tidiness of their house, the school, the kids not attending school, getting to school late. And like he says, look, I've got kids, and but there's two of us. I know how hard it is to get the kids out to school on time. So imagine doing that on your own. So instead of judging, let's look at the conditions that they are, that person's, you know, having to deal with. What's their current circumstances? And instead of criticizing them, let's find a way to help them, support them. You know, because at the end of the day, being a parent is not easy. It's not easy. And, you know, we do our best. And, you know, it's hard enough with two people. It's hard enough, you know, it's hard enough we've got two people and a whole family, you know, external family to support, grandmothers, aunties, uncles. It's still hard enough. But when you're doing it on your own, it is a mammoth task.
Especially when you've been completely crushed.
Exactly. And you've got your own emotions to deal with. You've got your child's emotions to deal with. They may be having emotional outbursts that is triggering you and triggering your wound, because, you know, the brain doesn't connect. If your child's having a moment, your brain doesn't associate that, hang on, that's a child. All it sees is I'm under attack, and the current landscape represents danger. And they're going to do one of two things. They're either going to react, maybe snap at the child, you know, which again can come with a lot of judgment. But we've got to look at what is around. If your child's like, displaying similar behaviours to the perpetrator, and the mother shouts at the child, that's only understandable. Or again, they could drop into freeze and not want to get up out of bed in the morning. What's the point? All that could contribute to them having suicidal thoughts. You know, particularly if they're fearful, oh my God, now social services is going to be on my case. Oh my God, what are they going to think? Oh my God, they're going to think I'm a terrible mother. Oh my God, my children are going to go into care. And then their life's going to be, you know, going to spiral even more. All those thoughts consume a single soul mother. And if the system is on their case, and when again, you know, if they're struggling to keep their head above water and they are battling child maintenance service, and child maintenance service are maybe making excuses, or not making excuses, but allowing the perpetrator to utilise the many, many loopholes that are available to them not to pay maintenance, you know, that compounds those feelings. And it can be all of those things that could build up and just get too much, and it can push that person over the edge.
And especially imagine, when they're going through all that as well. But say, for instance, that, they've still got the perpetrator stalking them,
Exactly.
using them,
Yeah.
using
Yeah.
technology, like literally, following them in person, false reports to social services, false reports to the police, and completely still, they've sort of thought they've managed to escape. Because they managed to get out of the immediate environment, but the perpetrator is still stalking them and nobody's listening, reporting to the police. The police aren't doing anything. Speaking to social services, getting accused of being high conflict, and you need to learn how to communicate better because social services are not understanding that this is a perpetrator of coercive control and abuse, and all they can see is a mother who is, air quotes, not coping. It gets way too much, and this is why, the statistics for suicide in women, who have been subjected to abuse are so high.
Yeah, but in
I think it's 30 women a day are attempting to take
or
their
a
own
day,
life,
yeah, a
and
day,
3 women a week
be a
are
week,
taking their lives due to domestic abuse.
yeah,
And that is just what we
mm.
know of so far.
Yeah.
I believe that the figures are much higher,
Oh gosh, there will be, there will be,
and they are getting higher and higher. It's going to get worse.
yeah. Because as we know, less than 24% report to the police anyway, domestic abuse. So there will be significantly more that are attempting or have followed through on it and have never reported to anybody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know, personally, I did things before in secret that nobody ever knew about. So I know that there are other women who are doing the same. There, serious tries are more know about because you have to go to hospital or speak to a doctor or but there are, I don't want to call them smaller because it's not the right word, but there are things that women are doing that are potentially fatal, even down to say taking over-the-counter medications, taking too much of it gradually, because they're trying them out, they're feeling like even things like that is self-harming behavior, and which could lead to fatality. And I know that this is happening.
So we're just going to break for a short interval and we'll see you after the break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
The station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. So I always like to try to close off particularly topics like this, with a message of hope. So if you're having these thoughts, it's very, very important to not, we don't want you to feel guilty or shame or anything because you're not alone in this. I defy anybody who's been through what we have been through to say that they've not had a thought like this in some way, shape, or form. It may not be in the traditional sense. I mean, I know mine wasn't in the traditional sense, but it could be something simple like, I mean, you can, I mean, even if you visualize, you know, having a car accident, and you know, that's still a thought. That's still a thought. And I know for me, it was me thinking that, you know what, if the cancer came back, that's my way out. That's my way out. That's not in the traditional sense, but it's still me, my brain wanting a way out. So I just don't want you to feel guilty. So how do we move forward from this? Because there is hope, you know, which is very much what we did, didn't we? You know, the brain needs closure, and it needs to find closure. We need meaning to what we've been through, and that's not to say that we're glad and pleased and happy about what we went through, not by any means. But because obviously, and again, it's just because it's what this is how it's looked for. You know, this is how it's played out and presented for me and Jen, doesn't mean it's the same for everybody. You need to carve out meaning for yourself in whatever way that looks. You know, some people go into caring roles, some people go into nursing roles. But when we and Jen trained, we found meaning, and that gave our brain direction. So there is hope. And this is where you need to listen to, you know, every single episode, there's stories of hope. You know, you can come through the other ends. Just because you may be having suicidal thoughts now, today, doesn't mean they're going to be there forever. You just need to find an alternative exit route. You need to help your brain find that alternative exit route. And if it means gaining outside support to help guide you to that, and that's all a therapist is a guide. They're a guide. You know, again, you know, IDVAs within charities, they're all a guide. You know, they can help you to navigate your way to a better future. And that's ultimately what it is. It's you finding meaning. You know, and use your children. You know, what sort of life do you want for your children? You know, and you are the best person in the world to give your children that better life. You're the only person that can navigate them through the chaos that we currently living in the world to a better life.
I mean, I just I think it feels like it's going to go on forever. It feels like there's going to be no end. I felt like I'm always going to feel this way. There's absolutely no way it's ever going to be any different, but it isn't like that. You know, it can change. It absolutely can change. It won't be like, it's very, very hard when it's happening, but it, you know, just needs to be that little seed of hope that you remember that you will not always feel that way. It is a temporary feeling. It is a temporary situation. Things that can absolutely change. I think if you're feeling like that, please, you know, reach out to somebody you can trust. Don't be frightened to reach out. Know that you are not mentally ill. This is happening because of what's going on. You are not mentally ill. Okay, remember that as well. That was one of the things that really, really helped me, was understanding I wasn't mentally ill. I was going through that stuff. It was an awful situation. And, you know, you can get through it. I am proof that you can get through it. And I am what all the women that we've lost to suicide could have been. So we mustn't forget them.
And a lot of it is feeling heard, isn't it? It's feeling heard and feeling understood and not feeling. And obviously, this is what we want is for you to. We are telling you, you do feel nothing to feel guilty for, and you are not to blame for this. And you are worthy of a better life. And you absolutely can have a better life. Absolutely.
Just getting through those dark times. There's always a glimmer at the end. Always, it might be hidden in amongst some fog at the at the time, but it is there. It is absolutely there, and things can change. They absolutely can. So yeah, that's just remember all the women we've lost to suicide because of domestic abuse, and remember what they could have been. And I think that's really, really important.
And again, for this, if we've got any professionals li listening to this episode, it's really important just to be mindful of people's environment and how your words and your actions could compound that. It's really, really important that you be more mindful, because that could be the very thing that could tip somebody over the edge.
And also don't act all shocked and scared. If somebody discloses that that's how they're feeling, don't get all excited and sort of worried in this, that, and the other, because it's a normal feeling. Just because somebody's feeling that way, it doesn't mean that they're going to go and do it necessarily. Support them, okay, and let them know that these are normal feelings.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And what we'll probably do is we'll probably do another episode, myself and Jen, to talk about mental health, around victims and perpetrators. Because obviously, suicide ideation is linked to mental health, but it's really important that people understand when people are suffering with their mental health, what it is as a result of their environment. It's not that they're disordered, it is very much as a result of their environment. And unfortunately, the perpetrator has developed undesirable coping mechanisms to soothe those wounds from you, which, throughout their life, they're getting something out of it. So, we will be doing another episode, an episode around that, because it is really important for people to understand, particularly the rise in people seeking diagnoses for mental health. It's never an excuse for abuse. And if somebody is having suicidal thoughts, they're not disordered. They are responding appropriately and accordingly to their environment that they're being subjected to. Well, thank you, Jen.
Thanks
It's
for
been
having me again.
great to have you on again.
Regular.
Well, thank you for listening, everybody, and we shall catch you on the next episode.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of this vital conversation. If you feel inspired to take action and support women, girls, and children affected by abuse, please visit the show notes in Kate's bio on UK Health Radio. There, you can register your interest in becoming a certified trauma-informed expert, specializing in topics that address this ever-growing crisis. Together, we can shape a safer future for those who need it most. Until next time, stay strong, stay informed, and remember, you are never alone.